It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A chance to tie it here in the ninth. Runner at third, one out. Broken back. Cut off by Wright. Out. Throw home. Wild. Tie game. Unbelievable base running by Eric Hosmer has tied it.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got some things happening in the world of baseball tangentially involving the Royals. But first, introductions. I, of course, am Jeff Herr. With me, as always, is the man who is never tangentially but always the center of it all. Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this frosty, frozen, no good, very bad, cold day?
I hate this weather. So yesterday, the recording on Wednesday, but Tuesday was the day with all the freezing rain. So I got up, saw there was all this crap, right? So I go warm up my car, scrape the windows, clear it off. Takes like 20 minutes just to even get to where I would feel comfortable actually driving it. And then I look down and I get a notification right then on my phone that KU has canceled classes for the morning at that stage. So I'm just like, okay, great. So are we going to be open? Campus stayed open. I sent a message to my boss. I was like, are we going to stay open? Because if he says, no, we're closed, I'm going back inside. Like, forget that. And I didn't hear anything for a couple minutes and just said, screw it. Drove to work. We actually did stay open. The way this story usually would end is that I get there and we're closed, but we did stay open, but it was just dead and nobody wanted to be there. And yeah, some people left in the middle of the day and yeah, I hate weather.
Such is the way of things. Yes.
right after we had all been, we missed last week recording because all of us were in Anaheim last week. So it was just like, you go from Southern California to ice storm. It's like, that's cruel. That's not nice at all. That sucks.
Well, I actually, we didn't watch any local news the night before, and I went to bed early. And it was because the day before, you know, we had President's Day off, or at least my wife and I did, and it was nice. We woke up and it was in the 60s. And then we went and we went to go see Black Panther. And we saw that, and it was like, by the time we got there, and we saw it at, you know, 1 o'clock, so not late in the day. It was in the high 40s or so, mid 40s. And then by the time we got out, I mean, people had gone to the movie in shirts and shorts, and they go out and it's like freezing. So, I mean, it dropped, just rocketed down the temperature that day. And then next thing you know, you wake up and it's all icy and everything else. I'm like, well, I guess we'll just try and see what happens, I guess. So, fun times, but tomorrow apparently we're supposed to get it possibly even worse.
Yay.
So that'll be fun.
Great.
Yay.
Awesome.
Missouri weather. Kansas weather. Yay. So.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
Anyway, someone who as we'll get into our baseball topic, someone who is not cold and won't be cold for a very long time, is Eric Hosmer. Our long national nightmare is over, folks. Eric Hosmer has signed a contract, a long-term contract with the San Diego Padres. So his days of worrying about cold weather are completely gone and will likely change. In a couple of years, he'll be complaining about how it's in the low 60s. Oh, man, it's so cold today.
Yeah.
It's probably – although he's probably already like – he's from Miami.
He's from Miami, so yeah.
Probably. It's probably how he grew up. But anyway, he signed with the Padres. This long, sordid affair between the Padres and the Royals and Eric Hosmer and how many years he wanted and how much money he wanted, et cetera, et cetera. He ends up signing for 8 years, longest contract so far this offseason, $144 million in total. Lots of little things going into the contract. Mike, you want to give a rundown of the some of the finer points of the contract, options and so forth?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, 8 years, $144 million. It's, what is that, about $18 million or so?
Ish.
Per year on average. But the first 5 years of that contract, is he'll get $20 million a year. That's on top of a $5 million signing bonus, so basically $21 million a year. And after those 5 years, he actually has an opt-out that he can exercise. He'll be 33 at that point. Very possible he might still have a shot at another big contract. He's in good shape. He's always been athletic. You know, decent odds that he might get a little bit something. But it's a player option. So the last 3 years of that contract add up to $39 million total. So it's really organized to be front-loaded and get him his money now. And then that back end is much more of like an insurance policy for Hosmer. Along with that, there's, you know, he's got a no trade, I think, for 3 years. So he's not going to get traded for 3 years, which I would understand would be a concern with the Padres because they don't seem to want to hold on to players. They just move them around. And then I think it's limited thereafter. So it's a pretty good deal for him. I mean, obviously, I think going into the offseason, we didn't really figure that Eric Hosmer would have the top contract of the offseason, but lo and behold, there it is. And this after six-year deals, seven-year deals were reported, or at least offers were reportedly made to Hosmer by the Padres and the Royals. He ends up holding it out and gets that eighth year. So he really bet on himself and cashed in. And, you know, if that means that the Royals' reported offer of 7 years, $147 million was you know, what they did, then, you know, they're comparable deals. But, you know, I think that opt-out is really what kind of makes it for Hosmer, because he bet on himself this offseason, you know, didn't take a shorter offer earlier in the process. So if he does end up taking that opt-out later, he'd again be betting on himself. And, you know, I think that's something that the Royals were not going to be offering, and reportedly they did not have it included as an offer, which makes sense. The Royals' idea the whole time was, all right, we want him here for the kids coming up, but we also want him when we're ready to contend in that next window. So an opt-out wouldn't make sense because the Royals would probably just be getting good again as soon as his opt-out came through, and then he's gone, and you just paid him to be a mentor, which that's great, but it's not really a good way to win baseball games. So it's an interesting deal. You know, I can definitely see why he held out if he felt that it was coming around. And, you know, it's also kind of a deal that the Royals were not going to be able to match in structure or in size. So, you know, good for him. Just like Lorenzo Cain, I'm happy for him. He got what he was shooting for. It's, you know, another kind of shock to the fan base because, you know, another big star. And Eric Hosmer he's basically been in the Royals, in their vision for like 10 years, since he was drafted.
Yeah, basically for the last 5 years, every time they have, because periodically, ESPN or Sports Illustrated or whoever will have their, who is the face of every franchise in baseball, and pick who that one person is for each team, and it was basically always Eric Hosmer for the last 5 years or so. So he was that guy.
Yep. But now he's going to be a Padre. So he takes over first. He moves Will Myers into the outfield again, and they feel like they're ready to contend. They have a lot of young talent in that system. So, they think that their window is coming up, and they've got 8 years to take advantage of it with Hosmer kind of anchoring what I imagine would be their number three spot in the lineup for a while now. So, it's bittersweet. It's good to see these guys have success and get paid for it. But it is, Hosmer was a favorite for a lot of people and one of my favorites as a prospect. And once he made it up and always remember the day that he got called up was just kind of like this mad rush of everybody being really excited. And, now it's a symbolic loss in that it really shows that the Royals now, they weren't going to pony up the years and the money for him. Now it's completely into the rebuild. So it's it's a tough move, but ultimately I think it's win-win-win for everybody. Kind of saves the Royals from having a big contract that may not necessarily help them. The Padres get their guy and Hosmer got paid. So it's good all around, in my view, in that sense.
Yeah, and just kind of as a side note, something that's really cool out of this whole thing. So Hosmer, he's been number 35 with the Royals, and number 35 for the San Diego Padres is retired, so he cannot wear that number. So he gets to choose a new number. And I don't know about you, Mike, but I'm always kind of unusually fascinated with picking numbers and who picks what numbers and why and everything, especially when somebody has to change a number that they've always had. Sometimes it's obvious, like Pat Mahomes, who was number 5 all through college when the Chiefs drafted and number 5 was taken, he became number 15. He just put a 1 in front of it. It's the next logical, it makes sense. But so anyway, Eric Hosmer chose number 30 to wear for the Padres, and he said he chose that number in honor of Yordano Ventura. So that's something that you just thought was really cool, like at least I did, where – he didn't have to choose that number. He doesn't have to choose to try and make any sort of a statement or remembrance or anything. He can just pick some other number. He could have even picked number 30 and just said he liked the number. He didn't have to say it was because of, Yordano Ventura, but he did, and he's doing it specifically in remembrance of him. So, that's something that's really cool. So even though, and I think that was kind of a theme from all the stuff that Hosmer said. Obviously, he's not going to be asked a ton of questions about Kansas City, but he was definitely asked some questions. And that was kind of the theme from him was, enjoyed the time in Kansas City. But similar to what you were just saying, his tone and the tone of the Royals is that door is shut. It's closed. It's locked. It's gone. We got the memories. They're there. They're in there, but the door is closed on that era, and let's start a new one. So that's kind of the way it's going to be. It'll be interesting, but it's now we know, now it's done. And I mean, Mike Moustakas is still out there and he's still unsigned, but based on, and we talked about this last time we recorded, because that's when the Dayton Moore interview had come out where he said that Mike Moustakas made it clear to him, or not to him, but to the Royals, that they were not a high priority. So, I don't know if the lack of market for him has kind of changed his tune. I don't know if Mike Moustakas seems like the guy who would come back to the Royals hat in hand and sign a 1-2-3 year deal or something like that just to get on a team. I don't know. But the point being, I don't think Moose is going to be back as a Royal either. And Dayton Moore pretty much, you know, they've – in an interview after Hosmer signed, they kind of all said – it's done. They don't have any plans of making any more acquisitions. And then later it kind of came out that they'd be open to signing Moose. And of course you're going to say that.
Right.
You know, yeah, of course. If he wants to sign a one-year deal for $10 million, we'll take him back, of course. Of course he would just go and sign the qualifying offer. But or wait, has that deadline passed?
Can you that's long gone. If he could do it again, he would absolutely do it, though.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but, you know, that's the game. That's the gamble you got to take. I'm sure when that was pushed out there, he didn't think that the Angels would sign a shortstop to play third and that the who else did stuff? I'm forgetting all the moves that happened. The Yankees just traded to get a third baseman. They got Chris Drury. That looked like a landing spot for him.
Boston, didn't they?
Boston. They were interested last July. I think they're going to just stick with Devers there. So you know, there was no real need there. Who else? I haven't thought about Mike Moustakas that long, but all of those avenues have closed up. You know, they're all
They're done.
Maybe the Cardinals. I mean, Matt Carpenter is having some back issues. He's played some first and third base. That might open up an opportunity. The next team that has kind of popped up is the White Sox, and that's kind of – I don't know how interested they would want to be to go after him either, because I think they'd probably be interested in the Josh Donaldson, Manny Machado race next offseason. So, you know, I don't think that – I don't think they'd try to look at Moustakas as a stopgap for 1 year when they have to give up a draft pick in order to sign him. But I don't know. But I think, and it sounds like, you know, like you mentioned, the Dayton Moore's comments after really seemed like they're just kind of ready to just move on and let's see what this next process comes to. And if Mike Moustakas finds his way back, great. But I don't expect them to be too aggressive in going after him. You know, they want to cut payroll anyway. And signing Moustakas to even a $10 million deal negate some of the moves they've already done to clear payroll. So, you know, I don't see that they're going to do a whole lot now that Hosmer has not returned. I think it just kind of takes them out of the running of making a lot of anything. You know, they're just, you know, they might make a couple of small moves the rest of the bit. You know, I don't really think they're going to be too committed to adding much more onto that payroll the rest of the way. So that might even mean they don't replace Hosmer. They just go with guys who are around. I don't know how that's going to shake out either. I don't remember who said it. There's someone reported something about like, oh, we've seen him, Moustakas, play first base. Like, I don't really know why you would do that, but I guess.
Yeah, you're.
It's not an option.
Yeah, I mean, first base is one of those positions where, like, if you play baseball, it's kind of an option, I guess, you know?
Right.
I mean, it seems like everyone seems to think it's the easiest position to play. And, you know, I'm not necessarily
inclined to disagree with that. Sure,
yeah.
But it's not necessarily easy to play.
Right, you can't just, you know, plug anybody in there. And, you know, even if you could, I mean, you're just looking for excuses to sign Moose if you want to put him at first base or something. And if you want to, I mean, if you're looking for excuses, I mean, you know, wouldn't you want someone at their natural position? That seems like the obvious, or at least the position that they've, you know, got the most experience with and kind of where some of their value is derived from. I don't know.
Yeah, but the other thing is maybe they could sign Moose and push Chesler Cuthbert over to first base, who has played there a little bit, but not particularly well. So I don't know. I think the Hosmer signing just kind of has people I think it has them thinking that, oh, we got to keep some, you know, Moose now for some reason, and this is some way we can fit it
in.
Yeah,
like we got to keep hanging on.
Yeah, but I just don't see it happening. I don't see the Royals making him a priority to retain. I think that they were all in on Hosmer. They probably knew that they had Escobar. Because, well, I mean, Escobar.
Because who else would
who
have
else
him?
Was – right, exactly. It's like, well, yeah. So I don't know. But, you know, that kind of, I think, pushes the Royals into the reality that, you know, this is going to be a new challenge. It's a good transition from, you know, that recognizable group to a lot of question marks, like, all across the diamond. It's just everywhere. They just don't really know what to expect. A lot of guys could bust out. A lot of guys could regress and fall back. And it might just be ugly in both cases anyway. So, it's going to be different. No Hosmer there. He looks weird in Padres uniform. It's really strange.
He does.
It's so weird. Like, Kane, at least, he's been in a Brewers uniform before.
Yeah, so you could, like, trick yourself into, like, just, oh, it was an old photo.
I remember what that – okay, yeah. But, like, Hosmer just in anything but Kansas City, that's just weird. So
– yeah.
But that's
– that's the world we live in now.
That's how it goes. A lot of guys from last year's team, they're all gone. So just the reality of the sport and where the Royals are right now. So they've got to get over it, move on, and so do we, the rest of us as fans. You know, you look back at all the playoff moments, all the big, you know, time, you know, the All-Star Game MVP, all the things that Eric Hosmer did, and, you know, you remember him with everything else. You remember him with, you know, Kane's scoring from first and, you know, Moose breaking the home run record and all those other things that happened. But, you know, it's 2018. Spring training games start on Saturday for the Royals. So it's a new era. It's a new year. And, you know, we just kind of got to deal with it. Didn't take this one as hard as Kane leaving. Kane was like the first shot of like, oh, yeah, they're really actually going to leave. Hosmer, I was pretty resigned to either, okay, fine, he'll stay. Or if he leaves, I'm kind of glad he doesn't, you know, saddle the Royals with that contract. So.
And through this whole thing, you know, I mean, knowing from a few years ago what was likely all going to happen, we always thought that, you know, Hosmer was gone, of course, number one, but that, you know, Lorenzo Cain and Mike Moustakas, there was actually a chance of them coming back. So when Cain's the first one to go, it's like, ah, man, that was the guy we thought we had the best chance at, and now he's gone.
So. Yeah. And I don't even think they made an offer to him. I think they just knew he was going to be going elsewhere. And,
yeah.
Which is fair.
Well, because he made it very clear he wanted, you know, the five-year deal range, and the Royals were not prepared to make that kind of a commitment to him. And to be honest, they shouldn't have been. So that was, you know.
Yeah.
That was one of the few times I can say that as much as I would have liked the Royals to make the sentimental move, they probably made the smart play there to just let him walk.
Yeah, and the result is with both of those, with Kane and Hosmer both leaving, they get picks right after the first round. So they're going to pick 18th for the regular draft pick. They'll pick 31st for Kane signing elsewhere. They'll pick 33rd for Hosmer signing elsewhere. And then they pick 39th in the competitive balance. So in the top 39 picks, they've got four of them. It's not a bad spot to be in, especially when you're trying to rebuild. So they can take some chances, maybe gamble a little bit on a really high ceiling guy who might have some risk to him. You know, it puts them in a spot where, you know, they don't have to be perfect with their 18th pick. They can, you know, you'd want them to hit on all of them, obviously, but it's not like the Kyle Zimmer year where you draft Kyle Zimmer and he doesn't do anything and now you're kind of stuck and that draft, you know, didn't really bear a whole lot. Now at least they have, you know, a good chunk. They've
got, you know,
10% of those top 40 picks. 10% are theirs. It's a pretty good pool to go from.
And if they want to do something like the what they did in was it 2013 with Hunter Dozier and Sean Manaea, mm-hmm. where, you know, they knew Manaea was the guy they wanted, but they drafted Dozier higher, hoping that Manaea would still be there. And he was, and that allowed them a little more kind of freedom to move. And they got both, you know, ended up with Manaea, who was a big trade piece for that World Series team, netting a Johnny Cueto in return. And or wait, he was in the
– He's the Zobrist.
The Zobrist trade, my bad. The Ben Zobrist in return. And then Hunter Dozier, who, as you know, we've already talked about on this show, is probably going to be – whether he's ready for it or not,
probably
going to be a big part of this team next year. So, you know, they've got room to do something like that. And we still have Mike Moustakas left, who, you know, if he signs, if he were to sign a Kane-like contract, or, you know, the idea of him getting nine figures like I think he wanted is probably out the door.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he signs over that $50 million threshold, the Royals get another pick in what would it be, like the top 44 or something?
They would. They go by the order of the team. Like the, it goes in reverse order of standings in that round. And so, like, for the teams that would qualify for that post first rounder, which was would be those teams that get revenue sharing. There's only like the three Royals picks. The Indians got a pick, and the Rays would get one. And I think the Rockies will get one for Holland. Also, so there's basically like six picks after the first round and before the competitive balance round that would work out. There's also this random pick that the Rays have in there because they didn't sign a guy at 31st last year, so they, as compensation, they get the 32nd pick no matter how the rest shake out. So the Royals would end up getting 31st pick for Kane, the 33rd for Hosmer, and the 34th for Moustakas if he signs $50 million deal. I think if the Rays, well, did the Royals finish ahead of the Rays? I don't know if they did or not. I don't recall.
Good question. They were pretty close all year.
If the Rays finished behind the Royals, they would get 31. The others would, it would go 31, 32 Rays because they would keep 32 and then the Royals would be right behind them. So, I mean, it's still the same general thing of, you know, five in the top 40 picks. So.
Yeah,
it's a good good spot to be in.
They finished with the same record. So was head to head? Is that the first tiebreaker, or is it league record?
I have no idea
for that. I honestly don't know.
I have no idea.
I used to know all like the NFL tiebreakers for that stuff, but I unfortunately for baseball, I don't.
I've
never spent time learning about the.
You didn't spend any time in college looking at revenue sharing eligible compensation pick tiebreaker scenarios.
Only vaguely. That was actually my thesis.
Right. God, you almost need that for some of this stuff sometimes. But yeah.
Yeah, it's true. But
the big point is they get a bunch of picks in the top 40 or so.
Five could have five in the top 40.
Yeah, and pool money. Those are each probably going to be around $2 million-ish, maybe a little shy of that, maybe a little bit over, but around $2 million or so for each of those. And that's just money in the draft pool, which gives them room to be creative. So if they've got somebody that everybody passes on at 18 who's like a top five talent, but they don't think they can sign, the Royals have the money to kind of throw some weight around if they need to go $1 million over slot or something. You know, slot might be $3 million. If they need to go to $4 million, $4.5 million, they've got the money to absorb it. So that's going to be fun.
That's probably the biggest asset of it. And then
yeah,
they've got – does that play over – how does any of this affect international money? I can't remember.
No, the only thing that gets affected by international is if you don't get revenue sharing, you'll pay some amount of your international pool if you sign a qualifying offer free agent, but no teams.
That's
nobody gains any. Yeah,
that's okay.
You just might lose some. Yeah. Which
gotcha.
Wouldn't apply to the Royals anyway because they get revenue sharing and they're not going to sign a qualifying offer free agent.
Yeah, so they're going to have their full allotment of international money, and they were hampered last year because they had penalties from signing too much the year before. So this year they'll have their full allotment of international money. Plus, as you mentioned, that big pool that could be even bigger if they get another pick from Moustakas. Yeah. So,
and if he signs anywhere before June, they'll get a pick around the, you know, the beginning of the third round. So,
yeah, so nothing. They're going to get an extra pick, but it just the whole X number in the top 40 might be a little bit lower. But so this, you know, this next wave that we were kind of just talking about a little bit earlier, hinting at that it's kind of, we're in the midst of it now. So we've got, you know, last year's draft headed by Khalil Lee, who I know Clint Scholes really likes, thinks he's got some good ceiling there. And then, you know, that draft class along with, you know, this myriad of players the Royals could be picking this year, that's going to be your crew right there. So, you know, unfortunately, it's going to be the growing pains of waiting it out and trying to see how we can bridge that gap. There's going to be some of that, you know, that 2008 to 2012-ish type. Unfortunately, but hopefully it'll be a little bit more exciting because the Royals still, I think, at this point have more homegrown talent now than they did then. That is like major league caliber. Cause you know, they didn't have, it was basically just like Alex Gordon and Billy Butler and a bunch of also Rans, you know, those are the only two like major league caliber players. Well, Zach Greinke too. And Joaquin Soria, I guess if you want to, but you know, now the Royals have, you know, they've still got Danny Duffy. He signed long-term, you know, Chester Cuthbert's under team control. He's not setting the world on fire, but he's a major league player. He's solid. Jorge Bonifacio had a really good year last year. You know, he could, you know, if he just continues that, he's going to be a solid major league player. We already talked about Hunter Dozier. You know, Raul Mondesi has, you know, unfortunately the results have been, and we've talked enough about it on this show, but the ceiling is still there for him to be a very close to, if not elite player in this league. You know, they've still got Ian Kennedy for a couple more years. Whether that's good or bad, who knows?
Right.
He's not homegrown though, but, you know, Alex Gordon's still around. So there's, you know, the Royals still, it's not an incredible amount of talent, but it's, hopefully it's a little bit more fun than just like, okay, you know, let's go sign Doug Minkiewicz and, you know, whoever else.
Yeah, let's get Scott Sednik just to fill out.
Right,
let's
Sidney Ponson.
Take a shot on Rick Ankiel.
Yeah, you know, so hopefully those days, and there'll be a couple, and every team, you know, every team has them. It's just that the Royals were trying to fill out an entire roster with those types of players, and that's where you go wrong. But hopefully those days are gone, and, you know, I'm not having any visions of the Royals being all that competitive next year, at least relative to what we've seen the last few years. But, you know, there'll be some interesting things to watch. And, you know, you say with some of the young players that are going to factor in big on the team, you know, they don't necessarily strike you as these, you know, soon to be great players, but, you know, if things all kind of go well for them, they could end up being pretty solid players. So who knows, you know? we'll see. We'll certainly find out.
Yeah, yeah. And Ned Yost even said that, you know, he wants to find a way to get Chester Cuthbert and Jorge Bonifacio and Jorge Soler 500 at-bats each at least this year. So hopefully they play well enough to continue that, and that, you know, injuries don't, you know, jump up. Because then you get to kind of find out, because Bonifacio had a good year last year. Can he repeat it? Maybe, probably. I kind of feel most comfortable in what he can do out of all three of those. But Cuthbert showed that he can perform when playing pretty much full-time when he filled in for Moustakas in 2016. Soler is apparently in the best shape of his life. He lost 20 pounds.
Hey-o.
He worked. Yeah.
Ding.
Yeah.
Mark it off on your bingo cards.
Cliche. So, you know, he has had good seasons. Last year was definitely not one of them.
No.
So if he can, you know, stay comfortable and make adjustments and everything, maybe he's somebody who, you know, really helps out the Royals. And, you know, all three of those guys, Cuthbert's available for a number of years yet. Bonifacio is still under a lot of team control. Soler's still got 3 years on his major league contract. So, I mean, those might be guys that you find out today that they're good enough to usher in the next group. And, you know, maybe, you know, maybe in a couple of years we're doing this podcast and we're talking about how Chesler, Cuthbert, and Jorge Bonifacio really show leadership to that group of Nick Prado and Michael Gigliotti and Nicky Lopez and show them how to be winners as they sign their free agent contracts. It's not impossible.
Yeah.
It's maybe not likely, but, I mean, you at least get to find out if Cuthbert is a legit everyday guy, if Bonifacio can, you know, put together consecutive good seasons, and if Soler's for real. And I think that's at least good information to find out if you're the Royals right now, because you've kind of got to get an idea of what you have now and what's coming, you know, up the pipeline in the next couple of years. And in kind of where you are, and especially by June, you know, you don't draft for need in the major league draft, but you do kind of have an idea of guys you might want to have in mind for 3-4 years down the line. And so if Cuthbert's able to play regularly, maybe you lean towards a center fielder instead of a third baseman. I don't know. So those are things to keep in mind. Plus, you know, I remember it being pretty fun back in 2011 watching a lot of young players come up and kind of start to learn the big leagues. It's this group's definitely less touted than that one was. Difference being that group was the best farm system in baseball at the time, and this one is arguably one of the worst. But, you know, it's going to be interesting, and especially once you get into paying attention to the guys in the, you know, the A-ball level who – are probably the next bet for being that really good class of players. Plus the draft coming up, plus Clint Scholes and I forget who else had reported. I think it was the Royals Farm Report on Twitter. One of the guys there had mentioned, and they were both able to confirm that there's a second a Latin league, I think Venezuelan league. Team that the Royals are going to have. So that's a whole team of kids that are going to get playing time at 16, 17, 18 years old. So the Royals have a lot of very young talent that maybe it's a number of years until you find them, but you know, you think of guys like Sal Perez, Kelvin Herrera, Yordana Ventura, who really developed quickly and made it into the big leagues quickly.
And were largely unheralded. Like,
yeah, none of
them
were
good international signings, but they were never top 25. Well, Ventura was, but
Ventura
Perez
was
never
eventually. But Perez was like, yeah, he was
never a top 100 prospect.
No, and they just all kind of they had unique talents that hit at the right time, and they came up. And there might be 2, 3, 4 of those guys, you know, hiding down in those levels right now. And in 2 years, we're going to get really excited about them. You know, they kind of just pop up a lot of times. You can do all the scouting, and a lot of times it's pretty good. But there's also plenty of times where guys just aren't on the radar and show up, and they're really good. And that's going to be the fun thing to kind of follow this year, is just seeing what develops out of that. I'm very prepared for the Royals to be like a 70-win team, and it's going to suck, and it's going to be frustrating a bit. But you know, in the big picture, it's still going to be kind of interesting just to kind of see how it develops and think about how it develops in relation to how the last group did, which is never going to be far from anybody's mind. But that's kind of the fascinating thing for this season, and kind of getting back into watching minor league box scores again, which we've said it so many times that the Royals got good in 2013, and we just – kind of forgot how to watch minor league guys. And thankfully Clint Scholes is out there, because
yes,
that is just his bread and butter right there. And I can imagine he's got 19 screens surrounding him just to watch all of these minor league games, because he's on top of all of it. And we're fortunate to have him around and share his info.
Absolutely.
But we can add our own insight this year because there's actual – it's probably going to be more fun than watching the big league team some days.
Might have to have a minor league updates section. I think we used to kind of have
those. We used to do that. Yeah, we did that on 1510 when we were on there.
That's right. Every we did week, do that. Did I knew it. At one point we did something like that. So
yeah.
Yep. But it's and you know, it's one of those things where if everything tilts right at the right time, kind of like you were talking about, you know, with Perez and Ventura and all those people, you know, when that happened kind of in that 2011 time frame, if everything tilts right at the right time, then you know, the team right now, we've kind of talked about this in the offseason. We were just kind of in our heads trying to play out what the roster would look like on opening day. It's not a terrible roster. It's a lot of like really good, I don't know if you'd say glue guys or kind of filler guys, but guys that you want on your team, guys that you don't want to necessarily be your team.
Right.
In the figurative sense, you know, like when you want someone to be your you want Mike Trout to be your team, you want Eric Hosmer to be your team or whoever, you know, players like that, but you know, you don't – Chester Cuthbert is a nice player to have on your team, but you don't want him to be your team. You know, and even someone like Ben Zobrist, who I love, you know, but he was that kind of a guy. He was, you know, better than Chester Cuthbert. I'm definitely not putting those two in the same category, mm-hmm. but, you know, Zobrist was still that kind of a player. You know, if Ben Zobrist is on your team, you're that's awesome. But if Ben Zobrist is your best player, then you're the A's – the year that the Royals traded for him.
Right.
So, you know, which is to say not very good. So it's, you know, so if there's a player like that that's in the Royals system, or there's one that they draft this year, and then over the next couple of years they get ready and they come up maybe a little bit sooner than expected, and there's a couple of players coming with them, and, you know, you mentioned some names, the Prados, the Giuliottis, the you know, whoever they might draft this year, then, you know, those players, they come up and then they've already got established major leaguers around them. Then, you know, you could say maybe there's a small 1 or 2 year window where even those guys could still be here and help compete before the full wave comes in. I mean, that would be kind of ideal because then you could really, push for a long, even longer window than we've currently had. So, you know, that's the most ideal. That's, you know, do I see that happening? No, I don't.
No.
See that happening at all. But that's, if there's a possibility of that happening and it does happen, you know, that's obviously the most ideal scenario. And that's how, if you're a team like the Royals, that's probably your best bet at trying to maintain some sort of competitiveness without falling into 30 years of complete and utter futility, mm-hmm. like we've seen before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would imagine we're not going to see a drought like that again because the framework, the structure of this organization is so much better now, where there are actual, honest to God, Latin scouting systems, whereas before the Royals hardly ever got anybody from Latin America. Now they've got just dozens of players who they've signed out of the Dominican and Nicaragua and Venezuela and everywhere else, and just like they have academies there and they have kids that they're helping at 16 and getting them started there, and it just ends up, you know, that's a lot better system than, you know, just kind of, okay, we randomly got Onyx Concepcion and he's good now. They're actually able to develop the largest pool of potential major league talent that's available to them. Is just there's so many kids in Latin America who play baseball. So there's that. There's actual investment in the minor leagues. I think they're in a better spot just in general to where they don't run into this system of $1,000 bonuses for players picked after the fifth round, and so you're just cutting yourself off talent-wise in the draft and not investing in Latin America and not investing in the players you already have in your minor league system, which is what happens so often in the first half of the aughts before Dayton Moore came on board. So, you know, I think there's at least that they have going for them, even though the next couple of years probably may be a little rough. But, yeah, they do have some talent. They have some guys, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how the younger players kind of develop and who emerges and who kind of fills in. You know, because, I mean, the Royals, they're probably going to be without three of the biggest faces of the last couple of years, and someone's got to fill in. I mean, those at-bats have to go to someone, and if that means that someone steps up and you find a leader, you find, you know, a lineup mainstay that you didn't think you might have, well, there you go. Or you really struggle.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be pretty rough. If there's a regression from, like, Merrifield or Bonifacio, could be really ugly out there because Alex Gordon's not a safe bet like he was in 2015. You know, Escobar, we kind of know who he is. He's, you know, his best case scenario is maybe he's got a .330 on base percentage. Not great. I mean, that's fine. That's fine. But it's like the odds of that.
That's a lot.
Yeah, he had that in 2012. But that was
that's right. He did. Didn't he hit the year he hit 300, wasn't it? It was like 295 or something.
He had 293 that year. Yeah,
293. So, okay.
I mean, it's not like he was walking a lot. It was just he got a lot of base hits. Good for him, but it's not really like reliable. That's, you know, I don't know. It could go either way. I'm prepared mentally and emotionally, I think, for the worst case, which is kind of weird, but you know, it'll be interesting.
Yes,
in a Hosmerless Royals universe,
in a Hosmerless world. Yeah. Well, it's, and we were kind of talking about this a little bit before the show, but it's really interesting. I don't know if I should say interesting, but you have to prepare yourself when you look at the roster and you think to yourself, okay, what happens if everybody, right? All nine players that we project at this point that are starting. So, I mean, if we had to make a guess today, you're probably looking at Perez behind the plate. Mm-hmm. You're looking at Dozier at first, Mondesi at second, Escobar at short, Cuthbert at third, your outfielders in some fashion, Gordon, Bonifacio, Soler. Would you agree with all that, or you think Paolo Orlando, maybe, instead of one of those guys?
I would have the way I look.
Whit Merrifield. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Whit Merrifield the second. Totally forgot. My bad.
I would say Orlando would be in center and Soler probably at DH. But yeah, I mean, that's basically it. I would say Dozier's the leader for first base right now, more or less, because the other options are Ryan O'Hearn right now or Frank Schwindel, and both of them would need to be added to the 40-man roster, and Dozier's already on it. So, you know, if you don't need to expose a player that you might lose, the Royals generally probably won't, especially now. Like, if it was going into 2015, if you feel like that player helps you win right from the start, you might do that. You might let that player, you know, hit waivers, and if you lose him, you lose him, but you get your best lineup from day one. Right now, the Royals really don't have anything to really lose by playing Hunter Dozier to see if he can do it. So I figure they're probably going to start him out. So that would be the one thing. I'd say Orlando has center field by default, which I don't know how I feel about that, but
yeah,
that's kind of what it is right now. And a lot of the other guys, Jarrod Dyson, we haven't talked about this yet, and we can get into this a little later. Jarrod Dyson signed with the Diamondbacks, so he's somebody that we both wanted. Austin Jackson's gone. I don't remember who he signed with. I feel like that was a while ago. Rajai Davis left. He went back to the Indians. Carlos Gomez signed today. Cameron Maben signed yesterday or this morning. So, like, a lot of those center field options that we felt would be out there, they're not there now. It's like, so Orlando's probably it. Orlando, Billy Burns, Bubba Starling, some group in there. Maybe Tyler Collins. Some group like that, which is not inspiring, but yeah, that would be what I said. I would say Paolo Orlando would be that guy. But yeah, this was a question I kind of thought of the other night, was like, what would happen if everybody that we figure would be in the lineup was able to match their career best year? And, you know, the Royals, that lineup would actually be pretty good. Figuring in, I kind of just went by OPS or OPS plus by what to consider what that player's best year was. And ideally I tried to find some, you know, better sample size. So like Jorge Soler had a pretty good year, but it was only like 290 plate appearances. So I went with the next best, where he had over 400, which, you know, he hit 262, got on base at 337 and slugged 399. Not great. That was 2015, but not bad.
I like those first two numbers, but
yeah, the slug was off. I don't know what.
If you're slugging 399 with someone with Soler's power, then something's off.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was there. His career high is only 12 homers, but we know that, you know, he can do that. So that's kind of how I just threw it all onto a spreadsheet just to mess with it, and the team as a whole. And with Dozier, the caveat with Dozier is that I allowed myself to cheat and consider his AAA numbers between 2016 and 2017. So that inflates a lot of this because he's didn't adjust it for the level or anything. I just transposed it directly into it. And but overall, if you were able to say, you know, the hypothetical is what if they had their best year next year and they just match it, you know, number for number. That lineup would hit 283. They'd get on base 336, and they'd slug 446 for an OPS of 782, which would have been fourth in the American League last year, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It also means that you need 2011 Alex Gordon to show up and 2012 Alcides Escobar.
Yeah.
And for Whit Merrifield, Jorge Bonifacio, and Sal Perez to all have career years like they did last year. Paulo Orlando would have to hit 300 again. Is that going to happen? I don't know. I know where I would bet.
Yeah.
So,
because it's not like we're talking about, you know, if they can hit their 50th percentile or if they can just do slightly above that. You know, this is
literally the best they've ever done.
All nine players hitting their 90th percentile in the same year.
Yeah.
So, and at that point, you're still looking at maybe an 80-win team?
Maybe, because it's not like the pitching's super good.
Exactly. Then you've got to worry about your pitching.
Yeah.
And the bullpen is still a question mark at this point in terms of how it's going to be, especially
a lot of lost innings
years past. And, you know, Danny Duffy, is he going to take that fabled step forward and become a, you know, true number one pitcher, possibly ace level talent like we all know he could be? Or, you know, there's nothing wrong with being the very good pitcher that he is. If, you know, if he has the rest of his contract like the last 2 years, then the Royals will have gotten every bit of value they could, and they would have paid properly, I think. But we all know it's there. We know that extra bit of talent is there to do a little bit more than what he's done. So, you know, is that going to happen? We don't know. Is Ian Kennedy going to be 2016 Ian Kennedy or 2017 Ian Kennedy? No.
Yeah.
So a lot of question marks there. You know, what about, you know, the rest of the staff? How's that going to fill out? And it just, you know, is Jake Junis, is he going to capitalize on the flashes he showed last year? You know, who knows what's going to happen? I mean,
the
pitching staff is a whole nother ball of wax, if you will.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like they have much better depth than they had last year, because the bullpen, they had some shaky parts, and the rotation, we saw some. Once Nate Carnes went down early in the year, I mean, they had so many injuries, and it was just such a struggle just to fill in and get somebody who could throw more than three innings in a start. And now I feel like they have a lot of guys who could at least handle that for a week or two if they needed to fill in for a DL stint or what have you. So I think they're in better shape in that regard, but there's not a lot of ceiling to a lot of these guys either. So guys like Jesse Hahn, Trevor Oakes, Scott Barlow, you know, just not a lot of like, there's probably not a 3.25 ERA breakout coming from those guys. They really just need to hold their own. And if they hold their own, they're well ahead of a lot of the guys that we saw last year. But then you're still counting on Jason Hamill having a good year, Nate Karns having a good year and staying healthy, Ian Kennedy being more 2016 than 2017. And it's just like all of that is just tough. And it gets even tougher when you take out Joaquin Soria, who we've covered. No matter what the vitriol says, he had a good couple of years in Kansas City again in his second stint. Scott Alexander, who was traded. Mike Minor signed, God, it seems like forever ago when he signed. That was back in, like, November when we were – how silly of us to think that players would sign at a reasonable time back in November. Peter Moylan just signed with the Braves, so he's gone. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys who played big roles back there who will not be around. Ryan Buchter got traded. He pitched well once he came over from San Diego. So just a lot of players that filled in those innings last year who are not there this year, and you're bringing in a lot of guys that you're not necessarily sure of to fill the gaps. And, you know, maybe the starting pitching is going to be good, but maybe the bullpen is really, really rough. Don't know. I mean, there's going to be a lot of questions, and I probably by the end of April we'll have some answers or some ideas of what those answers might be. But I mean, on paper, it's a curious group. So I don't know what to expect. But along with everything else, I'm just kind of like, all right, let's just watch and see what happens, because I don't really know what I expect. And I guess that means I can't be disappointed too much, but it's kind of a weird feeling after the last few years of, you know, excitement and expectation and hope to just kind of just watch, just observe.
Because one of the things that we talked about the last couple years that we celebrated for the Royals was, you know, besides the consistently competitive nature of the team over the last few years, the fact that going into spring training, we had one, maybe two question marks that we even had to wonder about for the team as they're heading into spring training. But the, you know, this year we've got a bunch, you know, as you see, because even the players that are already penciled in to be starters are still question marks. You know, I mean, we knew what we were going to get from, or had a good approximation from, the Hosmers and Moustakas of the world. But, you know, in all likelihood, Chester Cuthbert will start. In all likelihood, Whit Merrifield, Hunter Dozier, Jorge Bonifacio, those people will be, they'll be starting. What are we going to get from them? You know, we don't know. And that's, so this is, you know, just again, another reminder of, hey, we're back to that time where spring training is a little bit more valuable, because there actually is some things figured out. More than in the past few years, it kind of just had that, all right, let's shake the rust off, let's get back in the routine. Now it's actually, okay, we need to figure out if these guys can play, because we're going to be trying to put them on the team. So it's going to be a little bit of a different feel right from the jump with this team. I don't know what to expect. It's a good way to put it, though, is that, you know, I guess we can't be disappointed moving this. You know, if we don't know what to expect, it's hard to be disappointed that way. And I just hope for some fun baseball. You know, like, you had some of those late 90s, early 2000s teams with the Beltrons and the Damons and those guys. You know, they didn't win a ton. They were fun to watch, though. You know, I mean, they had a lot of you know, some of those years they were really good offensively, actually, and, you know, they just had some issues with pitching or whatever it may be, but it was still kind of fun to watch. You know, I just hope that we get something like that, something fun to watch this year, and it's not just like, man, those 04, 05, 06, 07, they're just a slog just to get through those seasons, and it was unbearably painful. I mean, 19-game losing streaks and 100 lost seasons and just
– miserable.
You know, Trey Hillman.
Trey Hillman.
Unicycles.
Unicycles and lecturing professionals at home plate after spring training games.
Washing, taking showers in full uniform. I mean, we got the whole...
That one was Tony Payne.
Got the whole... Right, but that was like 2004, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or was that before 2000?
That was 2004, yeah.
Yeah, so that was still in that era.
It's in that era, yeah.
Of just really, really bad
really
baseball.
Bad everywhere, yeah. Just so, Aaron Giles, like your best player a couple of those years.
Yeah, I mean, and there was... Because I remember my dad during those times. That was kind of the end of high school, beginning of college, that era, that kind of transition after the Johnny Damon, Carlos Beltran, Jermaine Dye era ended. And one thing my dad was always kind of saying was, he's like, you know, I just, you know, just hope they don't finish last. He goes, the Royals have never finished last. This was probably 2002-ish or something. The Royals have never finished last in the division in any year in their existence. And I was like, oh, that's a cool stat. And then that year they lost like 100
of course.
Four games or something, and they finished last. And he's like, well, that's over. So
well, we're done.
I always remember that. And then they finished last, I think, for the next like 5 years in a row or something like that. So just hopefully we're not back there. But we'll see, I
Tigers
guess.
Might help, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, White Sox are – they've got some talent on paper, but they're definitely
still
in that rebuild mode.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's, I mean, we haven't even thought about trying to map out the division yet.
No.
I mean, I guess, you know, Cleveland's still going to be the class there. The Twins and Cleveland are probably just fight it out. It's going to be like the Royals and the Tigers for this past few years, from that 2013 to 2015 range. So, and then the rest will just be kind of fighting for the scraps, if you will.
Yeah. Race to the bottom.
Yeah, if you will.
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there's a good chance the Royals finish last.
Yep. I'm mentally prepared. Right.
They'll
you know,
get a better draft pick.
Yes, they will. They will. And it's one of the, you know, they've garnered enough goodwill. I mean, I remember some of the heated segments that we had on the show, not between, you know, each other back when we had more, more hosts when Troy or Candler
like
was sticking in. Not that we would. Yeah, like not that we would argue with each other, but just that we would all get mad.
Just anger, Dayton Moore.
Yeah, and how where everything was going. And well, we found out where it was going, and it was going towards the national championship. So a World Series championship. So that was, you know, that goodwill has been built up. So I don't think I'll get that angry this season. No guarantees.
Yeah.
You know, if they're losing 100 games for the next 4 years, then you know I definitely may be singing a different tune. But
reserve
point,
the right to get angry at that point. Yeah,
exactly. But at this point, that's I think we're, you know, I don't think I'm in danger of getting that upset this year. So I guess I got that going for him.
Yeah,
which is nice.
I think anyone out there, if they made it through the 04, 05, 06 type of period, they can probably make it through this next one, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many fans who came back in 2013, 2014 stick around. You know, I mean, I get it. It's fun to follow a winning team and all that. It's, you know, I get it. But as someone who's followed them from like good to pretty good to, oh, really bad, to, hey, we're good again, to the top. You know, I want to, you know, see those people stick around and just kind of gut it out and ride the wave and see what happens. But I get it. I get it if people don't show up. It's understandable.
Yeah, I mean, you've only got so much attention. You've only got so much money. You've only got so much time in the day. And There's only so many things you can care about in the world. And maybe when the Royals started to get good, maybe you pushed something else out. Maybe there was another hobby you had that you spent less time with. Maybe you went to fewer Chiefs games. Who knows what it is. But, you know, hopefully that you've decided, well, maybe if the Royals aren't going to be as good, maybe you're not going to be glued to every game like you were the last few years. But, you know, maybe you're still going to, instead of push the Royals out completely, you still find a way to make room for them. Because, you know, I've been a part of some, you know, I like to think of it both Chiefs and KU as pretty great fan bases. Every fan base has their issues, of course.
Yes, but, they do.
You know, I like to think of them as pretty great fan bases. And there's been some super fun times, been to some fun games. KU won a national championship. You know, I mean, the Chiefs, their playoff ineptitude has been well documented. But they've made the playoffs a lot in my lifetime. They've, you know, they've had some good seasons, some big wins in the regular season, but some fun times with that. But I've never had as much fun as 14 and 15. As a sports fan, as anything, like I've never had as much fun as I did in those two seasons, those two playoff runs, so many magical moments and everything. And while it may not happen again, you know, definitely won't happen again this year, if you ask me, it may not happen for next couple of years, you know, those times will come again, and it'll be sooner than the last wait that we had, like you were saying. So if you are a newer fan, or someone who was always a Royals fan but didn't really invest a ton until the last few years, you know, I do hope you stick around and, of course, listen to the podcast to get your Royals fix.
Right.
Where else are you going to get all your prominent Royals news?
So I do remember we've had this discussion. It always seems like the blog and podcast content is much easier to come by when the team is bad than when they're good.
Yes, that is very true.
I don't know. I mean, I if I think about it, yeah, there's more things to fix. So there's and more things to complain about, frankly. So I get that, but I do find that to be an interesting thing on the fandom scale of things. And I mean, we've been doing this stuff for years and years now that we've seen both sides of it at this stage.
Yeah,
so
that's kind of crazy too, isn't it? But
yeah, it is.
And I've heard talk radio hosts echo the same sentiment. You know, it's easier to get up and talk about, oh, you need to fix this, you need to fix that, and do this right, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, especially in 2015, you know, the Royals got up to that super hot start, and it was like, you know, there was the excitement. It basically just becomes all speculation. When everyone is playing at the top of their ability, and you don't have like, oh, well, so-and-so needs to get better, and so-and-so, you know, it's basically just, well, everything's great. How far can this team go?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great topic to discuss, like, once.
then, right.
You know, or maybe every once in a while. But when that's basically your only topic every day, it gets tough.
You get a bump around the trade deadline, and then you kind of have to coast. It's like when the Royals had that brief slump in September, like early September that season, everybody panicked because they're like, nuts. Oh, it's like it wasn't really that big of a deal. But everybody's like, oh, God, do they think they're going to be able to turn it back on? Like, they do.
This team's done.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to
turn it back on. They coasted. Like, no, they still,
everyone. They know what they're doing.
For the top seed in the AL, they just had a bad 8-game stretch.
Yeah.
Sorry.
These things happen. There's still 28 games over 500.
But everybody was ready. Everyone was ready. They were like, oh, thing to talk about. Thank God.
Yeah, and in fairness, as Sam Ellinger says, that skepticism is come by honestly for Kansas City fans, but no longer. Times were different then, because that was just about a month before the World Championship came back. But so hopefully, you know, it's gonna be some growing pains. Hopefully they're not as painful as they were before, but hopefully the payoff is just as big. And we can get more playoff runs and more World Championships back to Kansas City, because that would be fantastic.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. But it's a ways off.
Yeah. It is. So we're not trying to make any illusions. It's going to be it's going to be a struggle to get there, but we all saw how much fun it was and how worth it is. So fun times, and you know, we'll have fun. We'll have fun as fans. We'll have fun on Twitter. We'll have fun on this show. I mean, all the you know, the street ball incident. I mean, all those things.
The street ball nickname. Let's see what else. The weird pitch perfect link to Twitter. What other things? A lot of those things, like the things that people reminisce about Twitter being really fun during Royal seasons, happened in the crappy years.
Yeah.
Not the really
when
bad
we had
years,
to entertain like, ourselves.
Right, 2010, 2011, 2012, when it was like, ah, crap, my baseball team sucks. I got to distract myself until they get good. And then they got good, and people stopped having fun. It was weird. Anyway.
Yeah. But anyway. So... let's have fun again. That'll be the motto this season. That's the Royals have their own motto. The podcast 2018 motto is Kansas City Baseball Vault. Let's have fun again.
Let's
do
fun
it
again. Yeah, it's a little derivative for my taste, but
whatever.
Screw it. Let's do it.
They're always derivative. They're slogans.
It's fair point. On that note, there is going to trying to think up a date to potentially go out and watch a spring training game at Kelly's Westport Inn. I don't know what date yet. Keep an eye on our Twitter or check in next week and we might nail something down. I got to talk to Mitch out there, figure it out. There's also
thinking about that on my way home today.
There's a couple times where it's like, okay, so St. Patrick's Day falls on the 17th. Definitely not going to try that.
No.
Not at Kelly's. And the next day there's a televised game, and we're going to give them a reprieve then too because that is a rough weekend for those guys down there. So I don't know. There might be – there's a couple of days that kind of fall in right. We'll see. But we'll update you when that kind of comes around. That's always kind of fun to just kind of just go, you know – there's literally no pressure because it's a spring training game. You just go and you watch guys play and hang out and have a beer and have some pizza. So,
and if we can make one promise, it is that Michael Engel will not do play-by-play.
God, no. No. Tried that. That failed. People just had – that was the last day of the season in, like, what, 2011?
2011, I think. Man, that was a fun day, though. That was one of the funner
– yeah.
Before the 14 and 15 playoff runs, that was one of the most fun baseball days. It had so many crazy things happened. But
and I think the Royals lost.
They did.
Didn't matter.
Well, because I remember, too, that they were playing the Twins, and that loss would have given the Twins 100 losses, which meant absolutely nothing except the
Twins,
Royals
could have seen,
Twins, 100 losses, yeah. So besides Schadenfreude, it didn't mean anything. It didn't happen anyway. But so yeah, keep your eyes peeled. Follow us on social media for that. Michael Engel is at Michael Engel. I am at the Jeff Report and Kelly's Westport Inn. You can follow. I have followed. What is their
Kelly's name? Bar at Casey? Kelly's. Yep. Yeah.
So
weird. You'd think it would be Kelly's Westport Inn, but it's not.
Yes. So we'll have that soon and keep you all informed there. Until then, you know, visit our sponsors. If you are out on St. Patrick's Day and you want to go somewhere, Kelly's is the epicenter of the city on that day. So if you want to get out and have some fun, that's going to be your place.
There's probably going to be a lot. But, you know...
And it'll probably be spilling out into the street anyway, so you'll be okay.
That's true.
But so definitely head out, and that's a few weeks away. But you know, if you're looking to warm your weary soul from this cold weather, there'll be some libations to be had at Kelly's in Westport if you're around. Also, if you're the stay inside variety, then go to BP Kansas City, of course. Right now, we've got Clint Scholes has a couple articles. We talked about the draft coming up this year, and he's got a series of articles. It's never too early to start talking about the draft, where he highlights a few players that he thinks the Royals could target or maybe should target. We've got an article just kind of going over the the Royals heading into 2018, kind of how the roster's shaping up and what they look like by Clark Fossler, David Leske, just talking about the different options the Royals have. Craig Brown got a Haas memoriam, if you will. So that and many more articles up on the BP Kansas City. Go ahead and check that out if you want some more content. And it's going to be gearing up. We're going to have a lot more stuff to talk about as we get into spring training. Players start making waves or don't. And then we're getting – I mean, we're close. We're down that home stretch there. It's getting started and things are moving. It's going to be fun. Season's getting started. It's baseball time, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be with you next week. I think so. I don't have anything going. You know, you're going out of town. You're not jet setting over to the West Coast again, are you?
No, I'm not. But I didn't tell my Dayton Moore story, which isn't really much. It's not much of a story, but it's worth noting at least. So, like last week, we were out. I went to a conference in Anaheim, but the flight actually went from Kansas City, stopped in Phoenix, and then continued on to Anaheim. So we check in. It's like middle of the day, I think probably about 11 a.m. Big group of us, about seven of us were going in this batch. And we check our bags. A couple of us got them checked right away. A couple of people were still straggling. And this guy walks in, kind of short, gray flat top. I only saw him from the back. He was wearing like track pants and, you know, kind of casual sportswear and stuff. And I thought, huh, that guy almost looks like Dayton Moore. You know, I didn't see his face. And then coworker comes by and says, did you see Dayton Moore? I'm like, what? Why is Dayton Moore checking his bags at 11 on Southwest right now? I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess. So, we get into the terminal, get through the TSA line. And actually, as we go to the TSA line, Dayton Moore is actually directly in front of us. And just kind of, I blew it. I didn't like ask him any baseball questions. Just kind of nodded. But he was
whip out your recorder and
I didn't
start getting an interview there.
I didn't. I should have. But he was getting, you know, checked by the TSA agent. So, you know, kind of let him go about his business.
Fair enough.
We got into the terminal and he was on his phone the whole time until we boarded the plane. And he was like number five in boarding group A, took an aisle seat. So if you had a question about that, he's an aisle person.
He's an aisle guy. Good to know.
His whole row was taken up like immediately by the time we boarded in the 40s. So there was not really any chance to sneak in. Oh, I'm going to take the middle seat here and just kind of overhear some conversation. Nope. Didn't happen. So landed in Phoenix. He took off. That was it. And then a couple days later, Eric Hosmer signed with the Padres. So
that's the way it's done.
Voila!
That's how you roll when you're general manager of a world champion team.
Yeah, he bought a personal pizza also in the terminal. If anybody's interested,
boom. Dayton Moore likes pizza. Confirmed.
When the options were like that or Starbucks because it's Kansas City Airport.
So. But you know, not for long, right? But anyway, different discussion.
Yeah.
It's there right now. But we were a little disappointed. When you mentioned it in the Slack chat and you had photographic evidence that you had provided, we were a little disappointed that you didn't go up and ask for an interview and or my suggestion, which in – because everyone knows the rules when you're waiting to board the plane before you actually stand in line. You just sit. You try and separate as much as possible. You leave the seats open. You know, people got their bags and
every
whatnot.
Every other seat, yeah.
But if you just would have sat right next to him and didn't say a word, that just would have been – I don't know why I think that's so funny. Just
hold
sitting
up my
right
phone
next to
with my Twitter feed scrolling in full view of him.
Yeah, just like having a normal day. Like, oh, hey, what's up, man?
Oh, interesting. Just you hear this
nothing.
About Hosmer?
Yeah,
the Royals offered him 7 years.
Who does he
think
he is? Can't believe the Royals would even sign him. How stupid do you have to be?
missed opportunities.
Missed opportunities.
But yeah, he was on the phone the whole time, so I don't know who he's talking to. But
we'll never know.
Nope.
Anyway, until next time, we will we will see you next week when we record. Until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. We love you all. We couldn't do it without you. We'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.